Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place.
Good morning once again, and welcome back to Happy Hour with Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci. Myself, Frankenberry, we have returned for another Sunday at what hopefully might be the end of an incredibly cold week in this nation. I mean, like, historically cold. Like, 75% of the country was going through temperatures.
Deadly cold.
Yes, deadly cold. Midwest, I mean, you step out your door, you die.
Yeah.
Kinda. That kind of cold.
Pretty scary cold.
Yeah.
But I was listening to somebody on Sirius Radio this week who basically
said...
Was
it us in the future?
It was. It could have been us in the future. And this person said basically what I kind of think every time this sort of thing happens, and that is, it's January. It is winter. The weather is complying with what we are really expecting it to do.
Well, no, actually, but it's not, though. That's the thing.
It's extra. It's like Uber weather.
Yes, this is extreme weather. Just like the extremes of the huge storms and the huge hurricanes and everything else. Mm-hmm. This is the cold version of the extreme.
But I guess my point, and I completely get that. My point would be, if it were going to be 60 below with the wind chill in July, then we could all be like, oh my God, I can't believe it.
What's going on? Right. Here.
Right, but do think about the fact that there are places that never get cold. That are like right now.
Yeah.
What did I hear earlier this week? It was a base camp at Mount Everest was 30 degrees.
What? Really?
Yeah. But we've got the possibility of wind chills of negative 60 in the Midwest.
Yeah. Oh.
That's how can you can't go outside when it's that cold.
Could you let's just think for a minute what negative 60 would feel like.
I'll tell you what though. You would be able to save on your Botox because your forehead would just be like, you'd go out there and there, it would be no movement.
No, my forehead would crack and fall off my face.
The only thing that has ever impressed me with Russians is when I read stories about the folks that live in these towns where it is perpetually like zero and below.
Is it true, do you think, that, like they say, your blood thin, like if you
must.
When you live in warm weather for a long time, do you think that your body changes for that?
To.
Like your blood really does get thicker or thinner depending? Well,
I'm sure the human body is.
Yeah, there's an adaptation factor there, I'm sure.
But if you think about
sounds like a book title.
The adaptation factor. It's probably out there. What minus 60 would feel like, you know, like when you take one of those... did you ever take one of those cans of, I don't know what it's called, Freon or whatever, and you use it to dust your keyboard, and it's a really cold air for some reason.
Yeah, yeah.
Imagine, like, squirting that all over your body. That's what minus 60 would feel like.
Well, have you ever seen, speaking of the Russians, have you ever seen any of those videos where it gets so cold that somebody will walk outside with a pot of, say, hot water, and they will throw the water, and it will freeze in midair?
We're going to be able to...
Wow.
Yeah, that can happen right here.
Wait, hang on. I'm just going to put that down on my list of places not to go.
the place where water freezes in midair when thrown out of bucket.
Do not want to go there.
Right. Okay.
Right.
That's my non-bucket list. Okay.
Ah, but on bump.
Mm-hmm.
She's here. Two shows daily.
Try
the wheel. So now, what were you guys talking about earlier? Is your mom having some sort of cooking contest?
Oh, whoa.
Hold on.
Hey, ho.
Do we not say this out loud?
It's not a cooking contest.
No, this is top secret stuff. We are all sworn to... Remember the little
rascals? In other words, it's stupid stuff. But go ahead.
Remember how the little rascals had the He-Man Woman-Hating Club?
Yes.
Woman-Haters Club?
The Woman-Haters Club, yes.
All right. Well, we have a similar club, but it's not about hating men. It's about being silly, and we are all sworn to secrecy. We all pinky swore. We can't talk about it. It's our own little private thing.
We can talk about it
in big picture, just not what we're doing within it. Because now we've got, I mean, anybody who's listening right now is just dying to know what it is.
You think they're dying to know?
Yeah, I do. They're not going to, they're not changing the station. They want to hear what this dumb thing is we got going on.
We can talk about the dumb thing or we can talk about my gynecologist.
Let's do both.
All right.
So we have time.
We're going to talk about the Secret Girls Club and then we're going to follow that with a conversation about a gynecologist.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay.
No, completely unrelated.
You with us? You picking up what we're putting down?
I'm picking up what you're putting down. Okay. Just be careful because I'm not wearing a cup.
Okay. Somebody bought me a cup once.
For what?
Because I'm a chick with a set.
Oh, and it was like,
yeah,
private here, chick. Hang this from your rear view mirror to remind yourself.
Yeah, that was the message. Okay, so one of our dumb friends, kidding, someone we love who's kind of a goofball, prankster.
Total goofball.
Started this thing amongst a handful of our close girlfriends and Jonna's mother.
Right.
Where one person will take a photo or video of something, and then the rest of us have to replicate it in our own creative terms.
Yes.
And then the person who posted that decides who the winner is of that one, and then that person then chooses what the next video or
gotcha.
Weekly
photo is.
Well, that sounds like fun.
It's just to remind us to be silly.
It is.
And it does bring out our silliness.
It is funny.
Yeah.
You've been killing me. And so, sadly, Jonna did not win the last round.
Or the round for that.
And whatever the equivalent of a text tantrum is...
I have perfected it.
Jonna has thrown them.
Perfected it.
And so her mother has offered up the latest challenge, but nobody's replied yet. Because
it's a hard one.
Yeah, well, I got it. I know exactly what I'm doing, but this group is sneaky. They'll sit back and they'll wait. They won't post their thing. They wait to see what everybody else does. Well,
I was going
to
say,
they champion their idea. No,
a little bit of a strategy.
See, no. That's where you change the rules. That's where you say that you've got a week to do this and everybody posts them all at the same time. Because it's not fair for you to put yours up first and then somebody to be able to top your idea. Before we have to say
like a Wednesday between 2 and 3.
There should be a deadline and everybody has to post at the same time. I think that would add
a bad rule.
That would add an element to this.
Although then it would take away my ability. See, what I usually do, except for this one because it's hard, is I post fast and furiously, and then as other people post better ones,
she reposts.
I do more.
She has like 3 entries for every contest.
Yes. Haven't won a thing.
Well, that's just my idea.
I like it. Frank and Bercy, it was nice to get a little input there.
Yeah, I like it.
All right.
So now what about the stirrups?
That was quite a segue.
Actually, and it's funny that you say that because I went to the doctor last week and I was standing directly in front of the sign that said gynecology department.
Were you really? Now, yes. Why did you go to a gynecologist?
I did not go to a gynecologist. I was at the doctor across the way from the gynecologist. I just happened to be standing in front of the sign that said gynecologist.
That's very funny. So I have one other funny story, gynecologist story from years ago when I went to the gynecologist. And as Frankenberry, you can't relate, but women can. When you go there, typically you have to disrobe completely and you put on a different robe because the doctor's got to...
Yeah, one that's made out of paper.
Paper. And it's got to open because the doctor's got to be all over parts of you.
Yeah, exactly. Right? I understand.
And a few years back when I went to... The gyno and
I remember this.
I was getting dressed after the appointment, somehow managed to put my dress on backwards, and as if that weren't bad enough, went to court right after that.
I remember you telling us this story. Yes, you went to court in a backwards dress.
In a backwards dress and didn't realize it till I had been strutting my backwards self all over the family court of Dutchess County.
Oh, man.
So this is not that story, but fast forward, I actually went to a doctor who's been in practice for a while, a new gynecologist for, you know, girls have to go once a year just because.
Yeah.
And I went to this particular doctor because a couple people who work in my office also go to this same doctor and they love him. But they didn't give me any information. They weren't like, oh, we love him because.
Oh, don't tell me he's good looking and young.
You know me so well. So I go to this. I just figured, you know, a doctor is a doctor, but if they come recommended. So I get to this place.
Why is it every story does involve somebody that's good looking and young? Because remember we had the guy.
But they're not always pleasant.
The guy that ran into the nail salon to use the bathroom just happened to be good looking and young.
The guy in the elevator.
Yep, he was good looking and young. So what did this good looking and young guy do?
To deserve me?
This doctor?
I don't know. So what happened was, so I go to this
and then by the time you see him...
It's too late.
It's to say that you're somebody else and then they say you don't have an appointment. You say, darn, I'll reschedule and you walk out. It was too late. You were in paper.
I was in paper. I was in paper.
Oh
the
gosh.
Doctor walked in. I immediately registered, right? I registered to myself and I'm cursing my coworkers who
they
have recommended.
They probably set you up.
I don't think they did. Maybe we have different Anywho, this doctor walks in.
Oh, my God.
We're the same. Now, here's what threw me. Normally, doctors that I've mentioned in the past are older, you know, or they're women. So, and I am definitely heterosexual. So, like, I am not attracted to either of those two. No offense to anybody who's older. God knows. But it's just not. I've never been attracted to my gynecologist. Let's just put it that way. Ever. Ever. Until this week. And it was so bad because he's young, hip. Now, to make matters worse, because the universe
I'm mortified
loves,
for you right now.
The universe loves to kick me in my butt and then laugh. So before I went to this doctor, not knowing that he was going to be young and good looking and all up, you know, in parts and places that all, gyno
in
go.
Your kitchen.
All up in your stuff.
All up in my kitchen. I have this thing, and again, the men are going to fall asleep, but the women will know. When you go to the gynecologist and you're all and you're wrapped in a robe, and you have to put your feet in stirrups, they actually call them stirrups, and you're all there. And I like my feet to be covered, and I can't wear my 5-inch heels when we're in that position at the gynecologist, though I've thought about it.
That's for a porn film.
I've thought about it, right. Yes. And then I thought
exactly, Frank and Barry. That's been done.
So ordinarily, I'll grab just a little pair of socks or whatever, and I'll throw those on my feet because I just don't want to feel 100% exposed.
Funny is it about what is exposed and you're concerned with your toes?
Yes.
That's my girl.
Numero uno. But today, not knowing what I was about to unveil, I grab not a pair of socks.
Oh, no.
I grab a pair of weird reindeer slippers left over from Christmas.
Nice.
I have them in my purse.
Now, I want to see sure them. He was pretty darn impressed.
And
I can't believe those slippers are not on Facebook yet.
We should post them. So I grab these weird reindeer slippers because they were in my little dressing room, and I throw them in my bag, and I go and I get undressed and I put on the little slippers, and I'm dangling my feet with Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer hanging off, dangle, dangle, dangle.
Oh, I can guess.
Right? And then
do-do-do-do.
In walks the female PA or whatever. She was fine. We had a conversation.
So far,
make a joke about my reindeer slippers. In walks Doogie freaking Howser. Right? A good-looking, slightly older version of Doogie freaking Howser. And there goes my feet. I immediately stop dangling. So now I have to say something, right? I have to bring this up because he doesn't know me. We've never met. This is the first time we're meeting. Good-looking gyno, me sitting there with my feet in reindeers. And so I look at him and I go...
And the rest of you in paper.
Right. Exactly. And I go, don't mind these. They've been in my car since Christmas. I totally lied. Like I didn't plan to wear them. I completely lied to his face. And he goes, so you know what he does? This is the worst part. He lifts up his pant leg, revealing socks with martini glasses on them, and says, don't worry, I'm wearing my New Year's Eve socks. And I was like, holy crap, we're going to get married.
Oh, good.
Holy crap.
Only you.
It was terrible.
Who's Tareed like?
It was terrible and wonderful all at the same time. I can't go back there, though. I got to find a new doctor. How can I?
I'll leave you be on that.
You're not going to get in on that?
Was he good?
He was a very good doctor.
Okay, then why wouldn't you go back?
He had a tattoo on his ring finger.
I'm out.
Okay, you got nothing?
No, I was out. Like, I would not be. I couldn't.
Right? You got to go find. I got to go find another doctor, right?
Right.
I have to. It's a must.
Do you guys remember my bad gyno story? It wasn't that bad.
No, I do not.
It pales in comparison.
But remind us, please.
That when you first get there, Frankie Berry, this is like an education for you of what we have to go through, okay? Mm-hmm. So
I do have exes, you know.
Okay. Well, I just don't know how much you talk about. Yeah. So you got to leave a sample, right? So in my doctor's office, you go in and there's this little like tray, multiple level tray next to the toilet, and they have a bunch of little, is it ringing a bell yet? Little containers that you take, and then you leave your sample and you write your name on it, although I write my name first. Then do the sample. And then I went.
Smart girl.
Yep. And I went to grab a cup and it was warm.
Someone had already sampled in your cup?
I grabbed from the wrong level.
You grabbed somebody else's.
I did.
Nice.
Did you just scratch out their name?
No, I promptly put it down and scrubbed my arms and hands up to my elbows. And then went and told my doctor about it. She's like, no, you didn't. I'm sorry. I'm like, it's not your fault. It's my stupidity.
No, it is kind of their fault. They should clearly mark full cups over here.
Oh, come on. It's empty or has stuff in it. That's my stupidity. All right. So anybody got a good segue here?
If anybody has a good gynecologist to recommend to me, please do.
I don't know. Look, if he was a good gynecologist, why wouldn't you go back? Obviously, you were able to tell some jokes with each other to start off with.
I don't know anything about her.
I cannot lust after my gyno. Please, Frankenberry.
Think how much money you'll save when you get married.
I can just imagine if you ever started dating and like what kind of picture text you would send. Remember when we first met?
It would just be a picture of your feet dangling in the stirrups.
Maybe.
I did take a picture of my feet in those slippers while I was in the office and sent it to my office.
to thank my
who shall remain nameless. I thanked her for the recommendation. On that note, perhaps we will be thanking our guest after our fabulous interview coming up after the break. Because if you are a gynecologist who wants to be an entrepreneurial and your mindset is holding you back,
or anybody else who wants to be an entrepreneur.
That's true. You don't have to be a guy. No.
Right. Yeah, that would be a fairly exclusive audience of ours.
But if you are interested in becoming an entrepreneur and you can't figure out how to like get past where you are, it could be all in your head. And our guest coming up is he's actually a lawyer and an author named Peter Strauss is going to talk to us about whether or not our mindset is keeping us from achieving entrepreneurial greatness when we come back.
All right. That sounds good. It's Happy Hour with Jonna Spillbore, Carol Pesci, and myself. And we will be back with lawyer and author Peter Strauss. Hang with us. It's 92.9 WBPM.
Sunday mornings with 92.9 WBPM means you'll laugh more and stress less. Now here's more Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And we're back with Happy Hour with Jonna Spillbore and Carol Pesci and myself. And it's time now to get to our guest, Peter Strauss, who has a pretty cool new book coming out, especially if you are an entrepreneur and you're looking for some ideas to help you achieve greatness.
Well, we both are, so.
Yeah.
That's right. You guys are, aren't you? I always forget that.
Well, yeah. Jonna's already great.
Oh, stop. Tell me more.
So, go on.
Jonna's a lawyer as well, yeah, Peter, by
right,
the way.
Right, and you just gave it away. Our next guest, Peter J. Strauss, is also an attorney, entrepreneur, and author of several books, including the soon-to-be-released The Accidental Life. He's the founder and managing member of the Strauss Law Firm on Hilton Head Island, South Carolina, where it's a little bit warmer than it is here right now, and also the founder and CEO of Hamilton Captive Management. He's a graduate of the New England School of Law and of Harvard Business School's owner/president management program. Peter also holds an LLM in estate planning. You are so lazy. My goodness.
Slacker.
From the University of Miami, and he speaks regularly at public seminars. Peter, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So we want to talk all about your upcoming book, and I think you have a very interesting topic, and which is your mindset keeping you from achieving entrepreneurial greatness? I just have to ask you, as a fellow attorney, and you're doing a ton of stuff, you got a ton of side hustles, do you still practice, or are you focusing on being an author and consultant and that kind of thing?
No, I still practice. I still run the Strauss Law Firm, actually, out of Hilton Head, South Carolina. I've been trying to be retired for several years now. It's just not happening. So I definitely still practice. My practice now kind of focuses primarily on kind of being an in-house quarterback for high net worth business owners. So I enjoy it a lot and don't really see it slowing down too much anytime soon.
Well, you had me at trying to be retired. I think that defines my everyday life. So.
Well, that's the thing with lawyers, you know, when they say they're retiring from the practice of law, it doesn't mean retirement in the classic, I've made a bunch of money and I'm going to sit on an island forever. I'm hanging up the law license and moving on to a real job. So I've been trying to retire for a while, but it's not happening. So.
So we're really looking forward to talking to you about this topic, because as we were joking just a second ago, Carol and I are both entrepreneurs, and I'm sure we have a lot of listeners out there who are either their own boss or interested in being so. And let's talk about that. I mean, who is your target audience? If somebody's interested in starting up a business, do they come to you? Like, what do they need to know?
Well, so, yeah, I mean, I kind of alluded to it a little bit. The, we like focusing on some core concepts like, tax planning and asset protection planning and corporate planning, those kinds of things. We build private insurance companies, we manage them. So certainly that, you know, what we, I guess our core audience is kind of a high net worth, what I call largely ignored middle market company or business owner. And, you know, it's usually kind of the cool guys, right? Some kind of niche in a service or product-based environment that you, wonder, why didn't I think of that? And what we find is a lot of these guys have great ideas and great companies, and they're surrounded, with kind of, florist shop, advisors. And so, we often have to say, let's take you out of your business to work on your business and take a step back. You've accomplished some major things, but we could do a lot of work here. So that's probably our key audience.
But your book now is not for that audience, right, Peter? You're trying to take the things that you learned as a lawyer, as an entrepreneur, as a lawyer who specifically works with high net worth, successful business people, and taking some of those principles and putting it together in a book for the average person to apply to their life as an entrepreneur, right?
That's right. And, really what happened was we focused on this interesting area that nobody's really ever heard of, called captive insurance companies. And so it's really kind of fascinating once you get to know what they are. And, over time, everyone just kept saying, how did you end up doing this? How did you end up, finding this area? How did you, build out a company based on this stuff? And I said, well, it's all, everything kind of runs together. It's all been an accident, but I'm happy to share. And people like the story. I tell the story a lot. And so, ultimately, my publisher said, maybe you should think about writing a book on your story and then using that as a catalyst to help others kind of, tap into their entrepreneurial spirit and see if they can, do the same kind of thing. And I thought that was great. It really appealed to me. So it was a kind of more of a passion project than anything I've done in a while. So I enjoyed it. It's great.
Peter, what are some of the specific principles? Someone's a budding entrepreneur or a wannabe entrepreneur right now, and they're listening to you. What are some of the key principles that you can share with them that will help them become a successful entrepreneur?
Well, it's interesting because it's kind of the inverse of what we operate on now from the standpoint of, I like to tell people, you've got to step outside the business to work on the business, which is a great way of saying you've been really successful, and sometimes you don't even realize it. And yet at the other end of the spectrum, to really hit that level, sometimes you have to put blinders on and block everybody out and, stay true to kind of your core belief system. And so, entrepreneurs are just, it's a minefield of littered with, success projects, but also, failure projects. And so I think if you're really going to go, you have to understand that you're going to have this relentless pursuit. And there'll be bumps along the way and be able to take that.
Peter, what would you tell? So this is what we were actually talking, we've talked about this several times. When I started my own business, I literally did it on a wing and a prayer. Like, I wanted to open my law practice. I really didn't have a whole lot of money to fund it. I didn't have any employees. I was, I bought a desk, a phone, and a box of tissues, and then I grew from there. But it was the scariest thing I've ever done in my life. There are plenty of people who could be listening who are like, I want to do this. I have thought of this great invention, or I want to manage this type of business, or I have a new idea for this. But they're frozen. Like, they don't even know where to start, and they're held back by that fear. What would you, is there like the top three steps you would tell somebody in that position?
Oh, wow. I could tell you the advice that I was given, or I could tell you the advice that I took. I think my father told me, make sure you've got, 6 months savings and you've got a couple of years of experience under your belt and you've got a good advisory team around you. I can tell you that what I did was started with an automated secretary and broke. But what drove me every day was the idea of, for me, it was, find out what you're passionate about that you really enjoy. And you have to take a look and see, if you're really, truly passionate about something, are you content in what you're doing? And if you're not, then I don't think there's as big of a risk as people think from the standpoint of, I think happiness really drives you a lot further than people think, and pursuing your own personal objectives and goals, there's kind of a satisfaction in doing that. So, I think you have to find what makes you happy and be relentless about it. And for me, a big motivator was all of the naysayers. I like to use a stack of chips, I guess I could say, to put on the shoulder.
I love it when somebody tells you can't do something, and it just makes you say, "Oh, watch me." And then something you alluded to this just a minute or two ago, Peter, and I forgot exactly what terms you used, but basically, what you were saying was really to understand your why, like what your motivation for what it is you want to do, because it's going to get scary. It's not going to go according to plan. It's not going to be as easy as you might hope. But when you stay in touch with that reason, that why you did this to begin with, that's what's going to help you push through, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was sitting with someone today, and I said, I had a job as an attorney, and I was doing just fine. And, I thought, well, if I get $1,000 extra a month after taxes, I'm left with basically enough to lease a nice car, not a fabulous car, but a nice car. But my life hasn't really changed. And if I did that again a second year, then my wife would have a car. But our lives haven't really changed. And I thought, and what's the likelihood of getting not $1,000 raise in a year, but getting two? It's pretty slim. And you think about how much time and effort it's going to take to climb a ladder that's not your own.
Wow.
To me, I felt like, all right, I'm willing to give up an immediate, gratification toy, I guess you could call it, for the opportunity to do something special and meaningful. So that was a big driver for me. Was, and that's a big, I think a lot of people, finance is a big piece of it, but it's also, that can be a huge roadblock when it doesn't necessarily have to be. You can look at it and say you don't have any money to do a business. You could also say you're tied to your existing job because you don't want to go, try a business. It's an interesting conundrum.
I think you can always get creative and figure out ways to build as you go. Like when I started my law practice, I didn't have like millions of dollars in the bank. I gave them my rent and my security was pretty much all the money I had in the bank. And I just figured out how to do it as I go. But I was talking to somebody, Peter, in this last week where I said, one of the biggest fallacies about being a business owner or an entrepreneur is that I thought I was going to be able to take unlimited vacations on my yacht, sipping Mai Tais while my business ran itself. And I could not have been more wrong. Like I haven't seen the inside of a yacht, and I don't know if I ever will. The drinking is okay, like that part's not. But the vacationing just doesn't happen, and you have to have that dedication. You do.
Right. Oh yeah, you absolutely do. I think you have to have a healthy liver to be an entrepreneur. That's for sure too.
Yeah.
There are plenty of mornings when you wake up and you why am I doing this exactly? So
Peter, when is your book coming out?
We're targeting mid-May right now, but we'll see how we can push it through final edits and that kind of thing.
Okay, and it will be available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com and all of that?
It'll be on my website. We'll get plenty of access to it.
And what is your website, Peter?
Yep. The website's peterjstrauss.com.
Okay, and before Jonna says anything, is the book going to be available in audiobook?
Yes, it will.
Okay.
This last one I wrote, I write books on captive insurance companies, which I think, unless you're really interested in the captive, it can be rather boring. So I remember they first came to me and said, you know, do you want to do this in audio format? And I said, sure. And they said, do you want to read it or do you want someone else? And I said, I wrote it. I don't really want to read it ever again. And surprisingly, the audio sales were not bad. And I thought, damn, I should have put that in my own voice instead of somebody else's. So yeah, this one I'll read as well.
Great.
So, there you go.
All right, so people can find you at peterjstrauss.com. Peter, we look forward to your book. Thank you very much for being a guest on our show.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, we thank you, Peter. And by the way, all three of us hate you for the fact that you're in Florida right now.
That's great.
Okay.
That's great. All right.
All right.
Thank you.
Peter. This is Happy Hour with Jonna Spillbore and Carol Pesci, and we've still got more to come. Part three is on the way, so stick with us here on this Sunday morning. It's 92.9 WBPM.
Live better, laugh harder, love more. This is Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol on 92.9 WBPM.
And it's Happy Hour with Jonna Spillbore, Carol Pesci, and we are back. Hello, ladies.
Hello Frank and Barry.
Well, it was very nice to talk to Mr. Peter Strauss there, and any entrepreneurs that are out there, I'm sure, learned some valuable lessons courtesy of our conversation.
Yeah.
And learned how to maybe change their mindset so they can be successful as entrepreneurs.
You know, it's scary to be an entrepreneur. It's scary and it's awesome all at the same time. So,
well, I mean, you know, you started your own gig,
yes.
You know, and it's turned out fairly well from where you, just tell us. You started with basically just yourself, and now how many employees do you have?
I started with myself, a phone from Home Depot, and a box of tissues. Right,
yeah.
And a lot of tears. You know, and now I employ 10 people, and we have, I mean, it's just a thriving, very busy, small practice, which is very much family-like. But it doesn't, you know, even when you own your own business, it doesn't have to be a law practice. It can be anything. You have ebbs and you have flows, and you've got to be able to keep the right mindset to get yourself through the times that aren't so great, even when you're enjoying the times that are. So it's you can't get enough of this information if you're thinking about being out on your own.
And I think even if you are already on your own, like there's certain areas you might excel at and there's other things that are more challenging for you, I find that reinforcement.
Yes.
And I've been on my own. We've both been on our own, quote unquote, for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I still value insight from
oh my God.
People
yes.
like Peter.
Every day.
Well, you never stop learning.
This is, no, absolutely not. But this, you know what we can call this show? Instead of calling it the Peter Strauss Show, we'll call it the show of incredibly difficult segues. Why don't we do that? Do you think we could do that?
Sure.
We went from speaking about
gynecologists.
Handsome gynecologists and the various traps that can befall you when you go to one.
Right.
To entrepreneurial success. And then I wanted to talk about this really interesting article I found about divorce and when in the course of a long-term marriage you are at higher risk to get divorced. But then you also have you got your own pee story that you wanted to talk about. So
well,
I don't know. Like, what do we do?
I don't know where we take it. Carol had that story earlier where she, she was supposed to leave herself a sample or leave the doctor a sample, and she grabbed the wrong cup. So she realized that she had grabbed a cup that somebody had already peed into. And I don't have any gynecologist stories. My apologies there. I have never experienced the stirrups, nor have I really had my exes tell me too much about their experiences with such.
Right.
I would know they were going, and that was
about
it.
And you thought you had nothing to be grateful for.
That's all you needed to know. They were going, and they came back.
But I do have a foreign pee story.
Oh,
what is foreign pee?
Yes.
Well, you grabbed foreign pee.
Meaning, right.
Somebody else's.
Did not belong to you.
Okay. Yes. So I was driving back from Florida, and I was moving back to New York from Florida. My sister came down to help me move, and we're driving, and we found a rest stop. And
you and your sister.
My sister and I. So I go into
bad.
The rest stop. We stopped at Burger King to get something to eat.
There's
so I went to use the men's room, and I had my wallet.
Room. Did you get a crown?
I had my, what?
Did you get a paper crown?
No, I didn't get a paper crown.
I know where this is going.
We're messing with his flow here.
They had run out of paper crowns, actually. So I go into the bathroom, and I've got my wallet in the side pocket of my sweatshirt. So when I go to use the toilet, and I push the sweatshirt to the side a little bit so that I can pee, my wallet fell directly into the public restroom toilet at Burger King.
Yowza.
So I grab the I grab the wallet out of the toilet. I take it to the sink.
But so far, it's your own pee.
No. I dropped it in there before I even started.
Okay.
I mean, we're talking foreign toilet here. We're talking
a toilet.
We're talking like truck drivers and stuff. John is losing her mind right now because it's a public toilet. So I take my wallet to the counter. I pull everything out. I wash it all off. I dry it as best I can. Hold stuff under the hand dryer. But then I realized all my money is now wet. And I've got to hand wet money to the person at the counter when I order my food. Thankfully, it had rained that day. So when I got up to the counter, I said to the young girl,
I lied
directly to this poor young girl's face, and I said, my apologies for the wet $10 bill. My wallet fell out of my pocket right into a puddle when I stepped out of my truck.
We're just a bunch of liars today.
Yes. And she looked at me and she said, oh, well, at least it didn't fall in the toilet.
Oh, no, Nellie.
Couldn't believe it. That was the hardest straight face that I've ever tried to keep.
Give me my Whopper. I got to go.
Yeah. And I looked at her. I said, yeah, oh, that would have been awful. Awful. Yeah. Glad that didn't happen.
Oh, my God.
Isn't it true, though, like what extents we go through to not be embarrassed, but yet the embarrassing things are the funniest things we go through.
Oh yeah.
Like in retrospect, at the time we're horrified and want to die and run out in our paper cape. But when you look back on it, they're the funniest things.
But I think that's it's a sign of a healthy mind when you can look back on something
and
that horrified you in the moment, but then you can crack up over it later and just know. I mean, it happens to everybody.
I think it's actually entertaining to just own the embarrassment as it happens. I think that's even funnier.
I'm not there yet. I'm working on it.
It depends. It depends on what's happening
to you.
You
know, like
like your snot bubble.
Like my snot. I own that.
You own that immediately.
Yes.
Yeah. So the time that I was joking around with my ex's son when he was a kid, and they got me a bunch of stuff for my birthday, including a pair of Batman underwear, and he thought I would never actually wear the Batman underwear, and I did one day wear the Batman underwear, and of course, that's the same day that I ended up going to an emergency room, and the doctor said, drop your pants. And I looked at her, and I said, Doc, I'm just going to give you the heads up. I've got a Batman logo on my crotch. Exactly.
Batman.
You know, but yeah, I think if you own up to it right then and there, boom, I think it's even more entertaining.
Yeah. But it's also like, why do people laugh at people when they physically fall down?
Oh, like, slapstick's funny.
Like, to me, that's... I guess the Real Housewives of New York, I don't know when the new season's starting, but apparently there's some epic fall that one of the housewives... that happens to a housewife, and it's supposed to be like just amazingly funny. And I always get, when I see people fall, I get nervous for them because you can hurt yourself.
Oh yeah.
But then if I fall down, I crack up.
But
it's funny if nobody gets hurt, and I would never laugh at somebody unless it was like you, where you knew I wasn't being mean.
Right.
Like there's just humor in this, but it was like a stranger who fell, I wouldn't like give him a hand to be laughing at them.
True.
But there is something in our nature that, like, I like when you see those montage videos of people, like, slipping on ice.
Yeah. That's so funny.
It's funny. I can guarantee you can take it all the way back to the caveman, you know? When Orr stepped over, you know, tripped on a rock and fell and hit his face, his buddy R was laughing his butt off. I'm sure it was funny back then. It's funny now. I mean, and just think about all the early movies, like the early black and whites. What was the funniest stuff? It was slapstick. You know, the Keystone Cops falling out of the back of a car.
But they're doing that intentionally. Like, you can't help. Like, if somebody trips over their own feet, it's just funny.
It is. I saw a list of the top 10 things that we all find inherently funny. Surprisingly, people falling down came in at number 7. I thought it would have been a little bit higher.
What was number 1?
I can't.
Snot bubbles?
Yeah.
I can't remember. I have to get the list, but I know dad jokes were on the list, believe it or not.
Dad jokes.
Yes. We all still find them in. Puns were on the list.
Puns?
What? That's dumb. Yeah. I can't remember who it is, but there was a comedian years ago that did a whole bit on what is wrong with us that we find it funny when people fall or get hurt. And he does this whole skit. He goes, the other day I'm in the mall and I see this guy. He's running down like towards a Kmart with the glass, you know.
Oh, no.
He goes, and he's running and he's running. And boom, he slams right into the glass and he's on the ground. He goes, but... He goes, I laughed, but I did. I called an ambulance. He goes, I had to. I couldn't breathe. I was laughing so hard.
Right? And I just don't get it. Like, I have, you may have seen me do this. Sometimes, like in the summer, if just the sliding glass door, just the screen is shut.
Wait a minute. I've witnessed you walking into your screen firsthand.
Right. And you're not alone. Several people have witnessed me doing that on several different occasions because for some reason it disappears when it's like dusk and you can't see it. And boom, you walk right into it.
It was awesome. Frankenberry. There was not like boop. It was like full on.
Because you don't stop at all.
Like, right, yeah.
Right, you're just walking.
That whole frame rattled. Yeah.
Boom.
It was great.
It's funny. And the funnier part is, nine times out of ten.
It's your house. Right?
People be like, oh, you're drunk. And there have been plenty of times where I've walked into that screen completely sober. Just saying.
That it can happen.
Right.
My father-in-law was visiting one time. Same thing. We have sliding glass doors out onto our deck. Door was open, screen was closed, and he slam walked right into it. And I was like, I took a breath in, and he looked back at us, and he goes, don't even. Open the door, and out he went.
All right. But that's hard to hold in, you know?
And it, you know, and it's funny when you see people when they, I think what's even funnier is not necessarily the fall, but people trying to cover it. Yeah. The way they hop
like
up immediately, like, yeah, nothing happened. Or, yeah, I meant to do that kind of stuff, you know. And it's funny to try to see how they try to cover the embarrassment they're suddenly feeling because they slipped on the ice or they walked into a pole, you know, or they tripped on something. And it's funny. You can even see animals do that. Like, I see the cats do that all the time. I see the cats do something where they slip and they do something silly and they'll immediately stand up and just kind of walk away.
Do you think that they get embarrassed? I don't think cats get embarrassed.
Well, here's the thing. Did you know that they might? Well, not as much as dogs do. So dogs have, I forget what part of the brain it's called scientifically, but the dog's part of the brain that makes humans feel love and sadness and happiness and emotions. Our brains are very similar to dogs. Dogs' brains are very similar to ours that in that section, and that whatever it is, hypothalamus, I don't know what it is. So they can feel, dogs can feel love and embarrassment? Anger. Yep. They can feel all the same emotions that human beings have. Cats, I think, because I read an article about it, I think to a limited extent they can, but dogs really do. Like our brains are almost identical, that one section of the brain. Don't quote me on that. I'll just lie and say.
So if a dog is at your house and it walks into the screen just like you did, the dog is going to like suddenly turn around, little red-faced, and try to say, I meant to do that.
It might. Okay. My dogs would. But did you ever notice that like all the funny dog shaming videos on Facebook, like, why did you do this? And they hang signs on their dog. Like, dogs' faces really show like I'm embarrassed or scared, God forbid.
They feel shame. Like, I think you can generally
see that.
That's
embarrassment, yeah. Isn't it?
I don't
pretty
like
much.
Dog shaming.
No, I don't like it either. But, and you know, my Roxy, my female dog who's in a class by herself, she can go from I want to kill you to I want to lick you in like 2 seconds. She's very moody.
Where does she get that from?
I don't know. No idea.
Not possible to figure out where
that
came
funny?
From.
But you're cat. You know, you're a cat person, Frankenberry, and cats are different.
They are different. But I have seen moments where a cat will do something that was unexpected, and I think it throws them off. So they try to snap back to what would be considered normal, and then just walk it off and walk away.
Kind of like cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Where they get the phrase "cool cat." Yeah, cool except for the one cat you have that likes to lay with its feet dangling off everything is so uncool. Yeah. It's not even funny.
Oh, I think it's great.
That cat, that blink is like water. I swear that cat can sleep in any position.
I got a question for you guys. Do you like macaroni and cheese?
Yeah,
of course.
So Costco has got something coming out.
I know what you're going to say. Go ahead.
They now sell a 27-pound bucket of macaroni and cheese.
Nothing screams appetizing more than macaroni and cheese.
So $90.
You for 27
get 27 pounds.
Pounds
of macaroni and cheese. So pound for pound, it's a good deal. Here's another, even better. It will, or scary, depending on how you want to look at it, it's edible for up to 20 years.
Oh, heck no. No. You know what? You might as well just bury a few Twinkies inside that 27-pound bag of macaroni and cheese.
Macaroni and cheese that lasts 20 years.
That is gross. Now, I suppose if the end of the world were coming and you wanted to store that in your bunker. But no. 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 Thank you. I'm going to say no there as well.
I mean, however much of a bargain it is to get, like, you know, $3 per pound, you know, that's not bad for mac and cheese. But something that can last 20 years, what is in that that can make it last 20 years? It's kind of like I've always been confused about the stuff that you have to refrigerate after you open it. I mean, how long does mayonnaise sit on a shelf? But it's still good. But
once air gets in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know? But no, I'm going to stay away, however much I like mac and cheese.
Solving the world's problems here, yeah. All right. Yeah. All right, so it's 6-gallon bucket, 27 pounds mac and cheese.
Yeah, do not give that to me for my next birthday.
Yeah.
I won't.
Until there's
you.
An apocalypse and you're like, you know, sending me messengers via horse. Carol, send me some of that macaroni.
I'm stealing everybody's 27-year-old macaroni and cheese. Yeah. After that darn apocalypse.
Such an inconvenience it was. All right, it's been happy hour.
Right? This has been one weird happy hour.
It's been a weird happy hour. We've got another one coming your way next week, same time here on 92.9 WBPM. We will talk to you then. It's John Spielberg, Carol Pesci, and myself. You all enjoy the week and stay warm.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonas Spilbore and Carol Pesci. If you missed last weekend's show or want to hear it again, visit the Happy Hour page at 929WBPM.com. There's more life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview next Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Live better, stress less, and laugh more with Happy Hour on 92.9 WBPM.